This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Philips has really come on in recent years in the digital signage ecosystem, taking on more and more presence at trade shows and releasing smart display products that my industry contacts have consistently said great things about. You probably have a consumer product like a shaver or electric toothbrush made by Philips and assume its commercial display products come out of that Dutch company. They do, and they don't. And I get into that in a chat with Joe King, a senior director with the company who drives North American sales. Joe and I talk about where its smart display lineup is at and its use of Android. We also talk about its CMS software, which he stresses is not intended to compete with commercial software products. It's meant to service the very basic needs of small businesses. We talk about market conditions and how the professional display company has kind of skated through all of this mess because the desktop monitor side of the business has exploded with work from home demands. Explore the company's camera-driven access control offer for retail and who's buying direct through LEDs these days. And finally, we get into what to look for from Philips in the next 12 to 18 months. Joe King, thanks for joining me. We've met in the past. I know Philips well, but you know, and I think generally lots of people know Philips. One of the things that sometimes when I'm introduced to Philips people, they kind of explain to me the background of the display side of the company. They may have Philips toothbrushes and all kinds of things at home, but Philips Professional Display is, as I understand it, the trading name for some other large companies.
Yeah, Dave, thank you. Good to be with you, by the way, and thank you for having me. Yeah, so we do tend to, you know, we operate as Philips. We operate under license from Philips. We're actually a global company called TPV. Mm-hmm. It's based out of Taiwan, and we're, you know, we operate with a commercial license globally for digital signage as well as professional TV. So signage TV, hotel TV, we operate that pretty much around the world. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of little pockets that are exceptions, but for the most part, we operate that around the world. So we have the power of TPV behind it and the manufacturing power of TPV behind it, you know, which we're quite happy about. I think most of the industry probably doesn't know the name, but we're the world's largest manufacturer of desktop monitors. We're the world's third largest manufacturer of televisions. And we like having that behind us because it gives us a lot of product development power and also a lot of manufacturing power when we need it. So so happy you bring that up and thank you for the question.
There's some really big companies in Taiwan. I've been there two or three times. I was there about a year ago and man, I was off to see AUO, but we went right by the, I think it was TSMC. They're mm-hmm. the biggest semiconductor maker in the world. And this, this place was the size of a Ford plant.
Yeah, huge. As I say, it's nice having that manufacturing power behind us.
Mm-hmm. Where do you guys sit in terms of market share in North America and in Europe as well? I think in terms of Samsung and LG being sure. top of the pile in North America, but you guys have really come on in the last two or three years.
We have. And even with COVID, Dave, we've been able to increase our share a little bit. So I think it depends on the, you know, the day of the week, whether we're number four, number five. We tend to swap back and forth with another brand there at that level. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. certainly we don't have the market power of a Samsung or even an LG. But as you say, we're growing. Certainly in North America, North America is a focus for us now. We're the number three digital signage player in Europe, again, behind the two large brands that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. But there's a real focus with us on North America because we feel like we're now getting our act together, so to speak. We've yeah. really improved the product line. We've put world-class service in place. something that I think we can differentiate ourselves with. But yeah, we see North America as a real focus point for us.
The company joined what many of the display manufacturers have done in terms of adding system-on-chip displays to their lineup. And one of the things that I've known about Philips is a lot of the software companies that kind of try the different smart display platforms out there have tended to say the Philips one is really good. It's very modern Android, powerful, runs like a top and everything else. How much of your product line is built around system on chip now? The commercial display product line?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot. We're probably, in terms of just sheer model, if you just look at a percentage of the models, we're probably getting close to 75%. We tend to, you know, we'll try to offer a model that doesn't have it if we're just trying to hit a price point. But for the most part, especially as you get into the higher ends of the line, almost everything has an Android operating system in it. And we see the business going that way, Dave. I'm a firm believer that I've been in the hardware business a long, long time. I'll age myself if I say how long. But I really do think that software is going to be the driver of this business going forward. And I think that our Android platform, as you say, it performs very well. We see it in large deployments where it's accessible. You know, it is an open platform, which we like. And we certainly see our business heading that way.
Is that something that you hear for companies as well as integrators and end users that they like that it's open and, you know, some of the other guys have their own proprietary operating system working with it. Whereas I've heard them, you know, others say we really like that we can work on just Android and do what we need to do without learning or tweaking something.
Right. Well, there's a level of consistency, I guess, would probably be the best way to say that. But yes, we get that feedback a lot. And it's, you know, we try to, I think one of the things that we've done that might be a little different is we tend to try to stabilize on an Android version. So if we see something that we like that's very stable, you know, we had Android 4.4.4 in the market for quite a long time. Yep. And even though there were a lot of updated versions, but we kept saying to the marketplace, this is stable. Why do you want to even think about upgrading firmware and trying to mess things up? So we tend to draw a line in the sand, if you will, at a particular Android version. And we've been very consistent in that. And I think our software partners like that approach, actually.
Mm-hmm. And where are you at now? I think you're 11?
We actually have some displays with 8. So we have we have two different. We have a 7, I think it's 7.1 in the marketplace, as well as 8 today.
Are there any objections still from end users? You know, it's a system on chip. What if something happens with the panel? It's, you know, I got to replace the whole panel, or it's not as powerful enough or anything like that?
Certainly, we tend to get those questions. I think we've proven with some of the demonstrations and stuff that we've done that certainly the platform is powerful enough. I think honestly, Dave, the way to answer that is that we've put a service organization in place that we think is second to none in the industry. So if somebody does need a fast replacement, we have the ability to do that. We offer people 24-hour turnaround. We certainly understand that if it's a menu board in a quick serve restaurant and it goes out, it can't be there black for a very long time at all.
No.
So we certainly offer, you know, the marketplace those opportunities for quick replacement. And that's one of the reasons we do it. Knock on wood, we have a very reliable product. I would put it up against anybody else in the industry, which is why we talk about that quick turnaround service, because we know we're not going to need it very much.
Right. Have you ever run into a smart display where the smarts have died and the panel had to be pulled down? Because I ask this question a lot, and I've never heard anybody say that's actually happened.
You know, I haven't, and it's a good question. I think, again, we try to separate those two. Mm-hmm. So the Android operating system is separate, literally a separate board, if you will, from the display itself. So those aren't tied together. You know, not only if a display goes black, it's going to go black regardless,
right.
But I have seen them tied together that way, and it may be just because of the design of our product.
Right, but I mean, the The fear, uncertainty, and doubt that gets sown out there around system-on-chip displays is if there is a problem with the CPU, which is a separate component from the display components and so on, you can't just open a trap door and snap one out and pop a new one in. You got to tick the whole thing down.
Exactly.
But I've never actually heard anybody say, this has happened.
Yeah, I haven't either. I haven't seen it. You could always make the argument, in deference to my friends at BrightSign, that you could see the same thing with a player, you know. And I think we like this approach. We think the improved service or the improved performance of the Android operating system is worth the investment. And we don't see a risk. We really don't. And as I said, I think some of the installations we have would certainly support that.
What happens on the install itself? I have heard some solutions providers say that field servicing drops like a boulder because we don't have all these connector cables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think even from our standpoint, we offer our software partners the opportunity for us to preload the software. Mm-hmm. We have a high touch warehouse facility where we can do that, making the installation process even easier. So I think that's one of the things that we offer that may be unique to a system on chip product, in that, the installation can, I will oversimplify, it's not as easy as just hanging it and going, mm-hmm. but it certainly can make the installation much easier to do with some of the preloading capability that we have.
Right. And what I've heard is because there aren't AI cables and other cables associated with them, there's nothing to wiggle loose and cause a truck roll.
Well, I'll share with you, we certainly measure, we have service metrics that we review every month, and we know that on average, about 65% of the calls we get into our call center are exactly that. It's what I would call operator error. So it's a cable has come loose, a power cord has come loose, and typically we see it'll be a little higher some months, a little lower some months, but typically about 65% of the calls we get, we resolve over the phone, and it is cable related.
Yeah.
And so I think that's just another argument for having a totally contained system.
Yeah, remove the points of failure.
Hey, you got it. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So what is CMND? I assume that's an acronym for command or some play on that.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, so it is our create and maintain product. So it is a product that we let people create their own, their own content. And I will say, to everybody, we do it at a very elementary level because we don't pretend to be able to do some of the things that some of the other software companies out there can do. This is a way for, if you're an individual restaurant owner and you own a deli and you want to put something up on a screen, this is a way to take PowerPoint and get it onto a screen really easily. It's a way for a school, as an example, if they need to broadcast an emergency message, this is an easy way to have that happen. And then it also gives you control. So it can, again, I use a school as an example. If there's, God forbid, an emergency message that need to be broadcast, it can be done from a central location and get to every product. Mm-hmm. We also utilize it just like some of the other manufacturers in very large installations. You can turn them all on with a button click. You can turn them all off with a button click. So it is that create software and that being able to control the systems as well. But that's what we call command.
So you're not trying to sell against your software partners or anything. It's
no way.
Yeah.
Look, we, as I said, we don't pretend to be that good. We're not in the software business. We're a hardware company, but as I said earlier, I think software is the key going forward. So we want to make our product as seamless as it possibly can be for our software partners. We're not trying to take their place.
Right. What I've seen with some of the display guys is a move to create kind of foundational software that's device management and control, as you describe it, that you could then port a web application onto and maybe if you've got a special purpose thing where you really don't need all of the bells and whistles and capabilities of a CMS, you could just use Command or CMND as the kind of the baseline platform. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's a fair portrayal. Absolutely. Yeah. As I said, it's meant to be kind of elementary. And look, there are people out there that, do the software side really, really well. And even the control functionality, they do better than we do. So this is meant to be a very basic product. You know, the great thing about it is it's free.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't charge for it. That's a little bit different than some of our competitors. And but again, we're not charging for it because it is a very basic system.
And these are end users, buyers who are just not going to, they're not going to get a CMS anyways, unless they get something free, you know, one of the freemium ones out there.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So I think 2 or 3 years ago, I go to a lots of trade shows, or let's more accurately say I used to go to a lot of trade shows. And I can recall, let's say about 3 years ago, going to ISE and seeing DirectView LED in the Philips booth for the first time. So you guys have got into that. How do you differentiate your product in a very crowded field?
Yeah, great question. Thank you for the question. Yeah, the last time you and I actually spoke to each other was or recorded anything was Infocom a year ago.
Yeah,
and about LED. And so we've of course, COVID has impacted it. We have sold some units, I'm happy to say, and some of them are going in now. But I think the big differentiator for us is, as I talked a year ago, is kits. So we tend to put LED together in a pre-configured kit. You know, we've been very successful with Video Wall doing the same thing. So it comes together with the display, it comes together with a mount, it comes together with all the processing equipment you need, the cables. And so we tend to believe in these kits, and that's where our success has been in North America. Similar thing in Europe. We've seen, look, people are custom screens, and we'll certainly give them the opportunity to do that. But for us, the success really is those kits. The first three installations we've done or in the process of doing in the U.S. have all been kits versus custom.
Now, I've heard that a lot, and the prevailing opinion seems to be that you have specialty LED companies who, everything about very large installations, big canvases, weird shapes and everything else, but you've got this whole big second tier of integrators and solutions who don't work with LED very often, and they don't necessarily understand it or get it, and don't have the cycles to just become experts on this. So a kit is something they can wrap their heads around.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that where we're looking at selling this and where we've been successful is mostly in the corporate market and also some of the consumer market. We have a couple of partners that are really quite strong in the consumer market, and some of these LED kits that we have work really well in a home theater. And that's where we've had some of our success. Absolutely. You know, you think about 165
inch. We're in the wrong business, man.
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah, we've had some success there as well.
Huh. And on the corporate side, is it primarily conference rooms and control rooms, that kind of thing?
Conference rooms, more lobbies.
Okay.
So in fact, the first installation we did was a corporate lobby. Even in COVID, it's still something that proceeded and was installed. So seeing more lobbies than we are conference rooms.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
More broadly with digital signage in general, what are those vertical market seem to be working right now, even amidst all of this nuttiness?
Yeah. You know, if you could tell me, you know, I think we've all been really surprised. You know, I think we all expected that retail would and retail has been impacted, but I think we've all certainly been surprised at how well, certainly quick serve restaurants, pizza, you know, the brick and mortar, home improvement, you know, large chain stores have done. We're seeing a lot of activity in drug stores as an example. You know, so it's really surprised me how well that retail itself has maintained. Certainly, we've seen a huge increase in education. You know, I think a lot of those early dollars to Chromebooks and laptops and everything else for students, but we're really seeing now an increase in some of the displays that are used for education as kids do end up back in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, all those places have a lot of change going on, and it's mm-hmm. not change that this is what we're doing for the next 3 months. It can change in an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's, you know, and I think we've seen some of that. And you know, certainly if you look at, you know, again, look at corporate as an example, I think in the U.S., there's really a tendency to step back about going back to work, if you will. Where I think in some other parts of the world, we've seen people go back to work a little more quickly. Certainly, we've seen that in Europe. We've seen people go back into offices a little more quickly. You know, just a personal observation, I think we need to do that here. I think people need to get back into some kind of a normal routine. And I think the office can be part of that. And I certainly hope that we're doing that as we get into 2021.
Yeah, I do wonder about this whole shift to work from home, how mm-hmm. that will play out. I think it works very well for some people. I've been doing it forever. I'm used to it. But I think there's a whole bunch of people who they do their best work when they're in a collaborative environment they can share.
Yeah, I'll share some, you know, just a quick side note. I mean, I'm like you. I've worked from home for forever. I have a great setup. I can do it. But there are people in my group who, once we made the announcement that we would open the office back up, they couldn't wait to get back there. Mm-hmm. You know, social distancing and everything else that we planned for, they still just felt that they were more productive in the office. And we have some that aren't, and that's perfectly fine. We've given them that opportunity. But to your point, there's some of those people, whether they be supply chain related or product development related, who just feel like they're a whole lot more productive in the office, where mm-hmm. they have the tools they need. And I think a lot of companies are going to see that same thing. But, you know, I certainly think that technology is going to have to help there. And hopefully digital signage can be part of that, whether it's collaborative displays, being able to Zoom effectively, if you will. I guess that's Zoom is now the new Kleenex. You know, mm-hmm. But yeah, I think technology can help there. And I think that's part of why we're seeing corporate maybe not as respond as quickly, is they're still trying to figure that out.
Right. Going back to retail, Philips introduced something called People Count mm-hmm. a few, like 2-3 months ago, something like mm-hmm. that, maybe more. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. So it's a product that we do it in collaboration with a camera manufacturer. And then there's some software that we actually developed that works with our Android product. But it's basically a way to count people as they come into a retail establishment. And then it's up to that retail establishment to tell the system how many people it can allow. Mm-hmm. So it counts them going in and it counts them going out, so that if you can only have 100 people in your store at one time, it will literally put Thor red light up. And tell people that, you know, wait, it's not safe to enter yet. And then when somebody does exit, it'll give them a green light and tell them to go in. You know, it also gives, with the display there, depending on how large that display is, it gives them a chance to tell people, you know, mask required, you can't come in without a mask. Mm-hmm. You know, gives them a chance to tell them some of the things they're doing to keep their area clean. And so it was very well received. We've done, I think it's been more well received in Europe. I think in the U.S., it's been almost on a state-by-state basis as to how locked down those states still are. Certainly in California, it's been a very effective product. You know, in some other parts of the country, it's been really effective. And then frankly, and honestly, we've seen some areas of the country that just say, well, we're not going to worry about monitoring people coming in and out. And so I just to be honest, it's been kind of hit and miss depending on where you are in the country.
Yeah. I think, I have heard it more broadly that in Europe, this whole idea of retail access controls has had more demand and more take up because there are pretty stiff fines associated with having too many people in the store. And I guess city bylaw enforcement officers in different jurisdictions who are pretty happy to write tickets on that because they, you know, they're incented based on what they do. Whereas, as you say, it's state by state in the U.S. I live in a part of Canada where we've seen very few cases or anything else, thank God. Yeah. But I've seen none of this stuff, and it's still teenagers acting as bouncers, you know, to get into a Home Depot or something like that. Yeah. So I think it kind of depends on where you are.
Exactly. I mean, where I live locally, and I live in Tennessee. It's you know, when it first started, there were people standing in front of the grocery store chain I go to, counting people as they went in and counting people as they went out, and they're on walkie talkies. And now there's none of that going on, you know. Yeah. And so I think they've just made a corporate decision that we don't need to spend that money to try to monitor who's coming in and out, whether they have a mask on or not. And where, again, I think there are some areas of the country where they're really still trying to do that. And that's where we've seen success with that product.
Have you had to kind of work with some of these resellers and buyers to say, guys, this isn't a product just for mint, that you can sweat this asset post-COVID?
Yeah.
Presumably there is a post-COVID. And, yeah. You know, you use this for other means. Have you had to do that?
It's been one of the selling points we've had to make to everybody that's purchased it. I that's been the capital outlay. But, you know, we had one large retailer that bought it for right at 100 locations. And one of their biggest questions was, what do I do with it when I no longer have to count people? And so I think that was where we came back and said to them, you know, well, here's what you can do with it. You know, you know, we put them in touch with another software, you know, partner. We talked to them about how you can use it on end caps, how you can, you know, thankfully this particular person is a digital signage user anyway. Yeah. But I think that, yeah, we've had that question from almost everybody is, what do I do after? And is this investment that I'm making now going to be something I can recoup even down the line? And so, yeah, we've linked them up with software companies to try to maximize that.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of gateway drug stuff going on there where this is something that can get a retailer or another kind of a business that takes a lot of public foot traffic in.
Right.
And get them on what you can do with digital signage and kind of migrate out from there. You could imagine once you start using cameras and sensors and things like that, you can start to understand how the store works and where people go and how that changes by time of day, all that stuff.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So there's a lot of talk in the cheap seats where I spend a lot of my time that LCD is a product that's going to go away and we're all going to shift to direct view LED and to micro LED. Is that something that Philips largely happening, or is there always a role for LCD? Because I kind of think there is when I really think about
it. Yeah, I think we've been talking about the demise of LCD for years, right?
Yeah.
And I just don't see it. You know, I think they're two totally different products. And I think that there's always going to be an application for an LCD. Do I think that eventually some of the video wall applications that we do today with LCD, do they end up being direct view LED? I think, yeah, that's a possibility. But I still think even as fast as the cost is coming down, I still think there's going to be an opportunity. There are just things that we can do with LCD that you struggle to do with direct view LED. And a lot of that is just based on the economics. Yeah. You know, and how much money people have to spend. You know, Dave, I don't see a school system putting in direct view LED, at least before I end up retiring. You know, I think that's a number of years away before that becomes a cost effective solution for them. And that's where some of the large screen stuff that we have and are competitive, you know, really works in some of those verticals. Mm-hmm. You know, will you see it in transportation more quickly? Probably. You know, when you're looking at, you know, what belt is my luggage on? Does that turn into direct view LED? Yeah, I think that probably is some of the first thing that happens to replace a traditional video wall. But yeah, I don't see it being that quick.
Yeah, I mean, the minute you get into utilizing what's possible with a 4K display, mm-hmm. you just can't do that even on a micro LED display.
Right.
You know, to have fine characters and fine detail and all right. that, it's just not right. the same thing.
Well, and you also just look at the content. I think a lot of it is content dependable. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you look at moving video, I think, you know, lends itself to either format. But if you're looking at static content, you know, think about a menu board, you know, in a quick serve restaurant, I don't think that is really going to be a direct view LED candidate for the foreseeable future, just because I think it works just fine on LED and it's much more affordable.
Right. So last question, in this weird world that we live in, where I wonder how this had an impact on things like roadmaps and product releases and all that, what should we be expecting to see from Philips over the next 12 to 18 months?
Yeah. You know, I guess we're fortunate because, Dave, we are part of a large global company that mm-hmm. is kind of diversified, if you will. So we, you know, our desktop monitor business has been off the charts good, as you can imagine. And I think in a lot of ways that's enabled it to support some of the development and some of the things we're doing in digital signage, where some of the other companies may have had to look at scaling back a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we're proceeding. I mean, we're going to introduce product in the fourth quarter of this year. Sometimes people look at us and say, what the heck are you doing? But we're going to introduce collaborative displays for corporate offices. We're going to introduce touch displays for education that are upgraded with some great systems behind them. We're going to introduce professional signage TV. We see that as an expanding market for us and others. So, Dave, it's basically a very cost-effective digital signage product that also has a TV tuner in it. So it's really made for use in a corporate environment. You think about, you know, we talked about conference rooms earlier. This is a really perfect product for that conference room because it has a TV. It is a TV. It also has some cabinet. You know, one of the things people struggle with if they're sitting around a conference table is, well, I want to present something. No, I want to present yeah. something. Well, this is a... Because it has Chromecast, it gives you that seamless connectivity. And then it also gives you that command software, you know, and the ability to control if you've got multiple screens in a facility. It gives you a chance to control that as well. But it really is a cost-effective product. Okay. And we like the fact, I think the big differentiator there is Chromecast and the ability to connect things, you know, and similar back into, we talk about education, you know, our education product will give you the ability to connect up to 64 devices to it. Mm-hmm. So if you're a teacher and you have students with Chromebooks, think about the ability to have, you know, one of your students throw something up on the display instead of the teacher always having to control that and being the one doing that. So we like the flexibility that gives us.
That would terrify me if I taught a bunch of 17-year-old boys.
yeah, probably would. But yeah, no. To get back to the premise of your question, yeah, I was on a call this morning. We're talking about 2022, and we're full planning mode. You know, we were firm believers going in, and my marketing manager would back me up on this, that we haven't really slowed down because we feel like if you start cutting and slashing, it's going to be a little more difficult to respond. Mm-hmm. It can maintain. We thank goodness we haven't had to furlough anybody. We haven't laid anybody off.
That's great.
We've maintained everybody, even in a market that we all know is down. And I think part of that will give us success, whether it's Q1 or Q2, whenever we see ourselves coming out of this. I think that puts us in a position, and our company's a firm believer in this, that it puts us in a position where we can have more success coming out of this.
All right. That was terrific. Enjoyed our chat.
Yeah, Dave, it's good to talk to you again.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.